This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. Palm oil is a polarizing issue in the face of growing calls for climate change action and awareness. Yet it remains an important contributor to the Malaysian economy, making up some 3% of our GDP and a source of livelihood for many communities. A documentary by University Science Malaysia academics attempts to go beyond the binary on the issue of palm oil, aptly titled 50 Shades of Green, The Complex Story of Palm Oil. Joining me today to talk about how to frame a difficult climate change discussion are Dr. Khairia Muhammad Hanafia and Dr. Nadine Rupert, senior lecturers at University Science Malaysia. Kai, Nadine, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
So if I understand correctly, the documentary came about as a research project by University Science Malaysia, USM, to improve knowledge and perception of sustainable palm oil production for biodiversity conservation. So from the beginning, there was the intention to counter the narrative that palm oil is bad, which is often the default belief in environmental circles. But Kai, that's not entirely incorrect, right? The palm oil industry has caused damage to the environment. So what story were you setting out to tell to mitigate that perception?
I mean, that's exactly how you described it, really. It's such a controversial thing. And when we set out to do this project, we were actually roped in to paint palm oil in a positive light. So that was actually our brief. But we were very clear from the get-go that we know that there are negative sides to palm oil. And we said the only way this is going to be a credible story is if we actually show them what is balanced and what is the perspective from multiple people who are stakeholders and affected people, and just let the story be told in a way that's as true as possible. But we still wanted to have like a clear message at the end. And so our thoughts at the beginning was, let's give a call to action, which is, you know, support sustainable palm oil as an alternative to boycotting or just going along business as usual. But as we started embarking on the project, actually talking to people and even learning more about sustainable palm oil itself, the word complexity doesn't even begin to describe how complex it is. It's really like a can of worms, you know, with so many heterogeneous moving parts. The challenge is huge, really. What was clear to us was, you know, a simple solution, quote unquote, like boycotting is definitely not a solution. But the sustainable palm oil also has a lot of issues in terms of transparency. So we ended up kind of posing it as a question, you know, as consumers, now that we've told you all of these things, you know, discuss it. And how do we actually move forward from here? So that was what we ended up doing in the end.
Nadine, coming from an environmentalist background, you're a primatologist. I mean, was it challenging personally for you to paint palm oil not as the villain? It's easy to see orangutans. They've been used as a poster child for the anti-palm oil movement. It's really hard to argue with that kind of depiction of how bad palm oil is. So what was it like to be part of this project from your perspective?
My first instinct was saying, no, I'm not going to do this. But then I was thinking about it for a little while, and I said, well, if we want to educate people about the issue, we need to tell people the whole story. So it's, there are good sides to palm oil. And the best side, of course, is that it is the most yielding crop, oil crop, for vegetable oils and other consumables. And there are many ways that it is made more sustainable in Malaysia and in other countries already. So in the past, there have been really, really positive developments. So I'm from Europe and I've always just heard the negative sides of the story, but I've been living in Malaysia for almost 20 years. And my family here also, they have oil palm plantations. My husband is Malaysian. So it's been something I've grown into. And of course, doing my research, working a lot with environmentalists and conservation NGOs and so on, I've learned about the complexity of the issue even before this documentary. But as you said, my first nudge was like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this, better not. But in the end of the day, I think we did it right by doing it. I don't know whether we did the right documentary, but we took the challenge. So that was, I think, something that at least gives the opportunity for the audience to create their own opinion. So now there's material where people can think about. And there's really no easy answer, as Kai has said. It's so complex. There's a positive side, there's negative sides. There is a lot of efforts by the governments, by NGOs, national, internationally, to make it more sustainable. And these need to be commended. I mean, that's basically, we can only make it better if more people learn about it, and especially for the consumers, if they can make a choice. And as we said, we wanted to kind of promote sustainable palm oil. And in Malaysia, by fact, you can't even find those labels. I mean, I don't know how many people have ever actively thought about sustainable palm oil or making those choices. But even if you wanted to choose sustainable palm oil, it's hard to find in the shops.
Kai, what were the different perspectives about palm oil that you sought to feature in the documentary? And were there any narratives that you felt may be missing from the overall story?
I think thanks to Nadine's amazing network, we were able to talk to quite a number of conservationists, NGOs, a lot of people doing a lot of amazing work on the ground, and things I never knew were happening, you know. It kind of really was a catalyst for thinking, actually, there is, I mean, if more people could scale up some of these solutions that people are experimenting on, things like forest corridors, replanting them, in situ rehabilitation. These things seem to be showing a lot of good evidence that they can work on the scale that they're doing it right now. And when we spoke to representatives from Sime Darby, plantation managers, they're also aware of these issues. They don't like being painted as this evil corporation, you know. So they definitely have a very strong motivation to try and push for sustainable palm oil. But of course, the larger plantations, the larger companies have more capacity to do that. When we spoke to small growers, small holders, they're less aware about these things. For them, it was more, I mean, when we were doing the documentary, palm oil prices were really low. And that's where you could really see the struggle. When we spoke to the grower who's in Orang Asli, and we were asking just like, oh, do you know that people are saying that we should boycott palm oil because it's destroying the forest and the animals? And I remember he was just really confused. He was just like, oh, you know, like, we're Orang Asli, we love the animals. We're just growing a little bit of oil palm. That's, you know, this is how we're making a living. But I mean, the drop in prices is a complex thing itself, but it made things very real to see, you know, this is it. This is where I think the battleground really is, because these are the most vulnerable people when you talk about changing prices. And we also spoke to representatives from agencies, which is good to hear that, you know, Malaysia does have the policies in place to try and curb expansion. And I do say try, hopefully it does happen, but I think the will seems to be there. So hopefully we just hold them to that promise that we don't expand any further and really try to increase the capacity with the existing land that we have. We spoke to a lot of people on the street. And so it's really interesting when you talk to like Malaysians who are like, what's wrong with palm oil? Or some people didn't even know that they were using palm oil. It was really interesting. And then, you know, international visitors, they're like, oh, palm oil is bad, for sure. And you really see that stark difference in opinion. And we spoke to other people as well, but I think what is missing in the documentary is the perspective of a big buyer. Unfortunately, we weren't able to pin one down in time. And they're a very, very important part of the supply chain that I don't think gets recognized enough. And that ties back to what Nadine was saying, like this whole idea of when it comes to the final consumer, they're buying what big buyers of palm oil are producing and making, and the labeling of these products and the awareness about what you're spending your money on. I think those are some of the critical links that are missing.
Nadine, you did mention earlier that there is this lack of awareness among consumers in Malaysia just about the option to buy sustainable palm oil or to find products that are sustainably sourced. Why do you think that's the case? If you compare like from Europe and here, and given the fact that you've lived here for a long time, I guess, you know, from the outsider's perspective, why are these issues not as important to Malaysia? Is it because do we not know about them? Are they just not important to us? Or why do you think there's that difference?
I mean, that's a really good question. I never really thought about it. So I'm not sure whether I can give any correct answer to that. But just my two cents. I mean, obviously, palm oil has been grown in Malaysia for quite a long time. So I think most Malaysians are first, second, maybe even third generation, you know, growing up with palm oil. And it's just, it's a lifestyle, you know, it's part of the country. You're driving through the countryside, you see palm oil plantations, and nobody really thinks anything about it. I mean, in the documentary, we had a lady saying, why is there anything bad about it? It's green, right? So it's nice, it's beautiful. So there isn't really much awareness about the impact on biodiversity when palm oil plantations are opened on formerly pristine forest lands. And of course, many NGOs and many activists are aware about these issues, but I'm speaking about the broad public. So growing up with palm oil as your major staple cooking oil, I don't think people ever really deeply think about demanding sustainable palm oil. And I mean sustainably labeled, certified sustainable palm oil. In countries like in Germany, where I'm from, of course, sustainability and environmentalism also has a long standing. I mean, we formed our Green Party in the 60s, 70s. So there's a movement of becoming more green, becoming more sustainable, environment friendly. And now with climate change and everything, it's basically a strong sentiment in Europe. So this is where the boycotts are coming from, like the polarization is there. So we do have the strong will to do something better. And it doesn't mean we know how, right? But we demand maybe for more sustainability. So these companies, the shops and so on, they are maybe more pressured to label their products because the consumers actually demand for it. And that's not happening yet in Malaysia. And this is something that needs to change, definitely. And just on that note as well, I mean, in Germany then, or in Europe, basically, this is why the calls for boycotts are actually quite loud, is because they think this is the right alternative. You boycott because then you save orangutan. You boycott because then there's no more forests being cut down. You boycott, then there's no more habitat loss and loss of biodiversity. But they lack the bigger picture because most of the people have never been to Southeast Asia. They haven't seen what's actually going on, how people are living here, what's the economy like, how is this whole network of smallholders and companies, how is this contributing to palm oil production? And of course, they don't know as well that there's really no better alternative, because if you were to grow soy, then you have like 20 times, you need 20 times more land to grow that. And the output is just so little. So in the end, you might end up losing more forests. So there's a lack of awareness or better knowledge about the complexity of the issue itself.
I'm speaking to Dr. Khairia Mohamad Hanafia and Dr. Nadine Rupert, senior lecturers at University Science Malaysia. When we come back, what goes into making a documentary? More from this conversation after the break. Here's a quick message. What makes Selangor an attractive destination to foreign investors? How is the state staying resilient despite these trying times? Join us tomorrow, Tuesday, the 26th of October at 8:45 a.m. when we speak to Dato' Hassan Azhari Idris, CEO of Invest Selangor Berhad, about how Selangor continues to promise economic growth with a few innovative projects in the pipeline. BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just tuned in, this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. I'm Shazana, and today I'm speaking to Dr. Khairia Mohamad Hanafia and Dr. Nadine Rupert, senior lecturers at University Science Malaysia. They are the filmmakers behind the documentary 50 Shades of Green, The Complex Story of Palm Oil. Now, both of you are scientists by training. Both of you are first-time filmmakers, I'm presuming. So what was the learning curve like in coming up with this documentary? Let's start with you, Kai.
Oh my God. You know, if you ask me 20 years ago, what did I want to be when I grow up? I'd be like, film director. Yeah, you know. So when this opportunity came up, there was a lot of excitement, a lot of passion, and obviously very little experience or knowledge. And suddenly I realized, oh, I'm in way over my head. So the budgeting was a huge, I would say, nightmare that we had to learn the hard way. And we were definitely under budgeted even to begin with. This is the nature of research grants as well, you know. I think somehow we were very lucky. Our production manager, Andy, was actually Sabahat. And she's also one of those people who just have an amazing network as well. So we were able to plan it in a way that we were able to film within 8 to 10 days and get a lot of what we wanted. I think the challenging part was the street interviews. I thought that was going to be the easy part, but it's actually really hard to stop people and ask them their opinion for something. And then there's all these laws about filming people on the street as well. And so we didn't realize that we were getting, you know, ushered away by security guards every now and then, depending on where we were. So that became a challenge. And this is a bit of a funny story about, you know, doing your homework in advance when you're at location. We wanted to take a nice aerial view of Bohe Dulang because it's so beautiful. And we had a drone cameraman. He's carrying 20 kilograms of equipment here. So me and Nadine and him were trekking up behind this tour guide. And when we get up there, there's a no drone sign. And so we couldn't film it anyway, but it was a beautiful, beautiful sight to behold.
That's the thing, right? The technology age makes it seem so easy to tell a story through video. You know, you just need to have a phone and then you can just go take a you know, just tell that story. But from what you're telling me, it's really not that easy. And there's so much that goes into it beyond what we can imagine. What about you, Nadine? What did you think were some of the things that you wished you had known when you first started out?
A lot. I mean, I've never done a documentary before. And I really want to like have a big shout out to our team because, I mean, they're amazing. Like Andy, thank you, Zul, and everyone, because of course their experience carried the whole thing. And for us, when we started, Kai was like, she's that little like weasel, ding, 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 writing everything in one night. Ha, this is the story. Are you happy with that? Then we discussed a lot over coffee, and there were like a lot of coffee meetings and polishing everything up. But it wasn't really clear how we're going to tell the whole story from like an anchor point of view. So the idea that I'm going to be in there actually came quite late, and I really refused because I said, like, I'm not going to be the Matsale, like, you know, selling palm oil. So exactly what you said in the beginning. But I mean, the team kind of convinced me because it does make sense. I mean, if you want to be credible talking from different perspectives, obviously, I know what's happening in Europe. I've been working in Malaysia for such a long time. I have been working with all these environmental NGOs and issues. So and I said, my family, they have a plantation. So it's their livelihood. So yeah, they kind of talked me into that.
And without the anchor, we wouldn't have the documentary. That's for sure. I think that's a really good point, Nadine. Like, we were able to still, you know, largely achieve the plan we set out, but we still didn't have a story until we decided, like, Nadine has to be the star.
Nadine kind of helped to make that story more relatable and just more understandable to people, yeah? Watching it from both sides, whether you're European or even if you're Malaysian, coming from somebody who's in the palm oil industry, even if it's just tangentially. And that brings me to like the question that runs through this conversation, the fact that issues of climate change and environmental sustainability, they're so important. But at the same time, it's really hard to make people understand just how critical action is. The consequences, it seems like they're going to be felt way in the distant future. We don't really feel that now. How can we tell these stories better? From your experience doing this documentary, what do you think works in trying to get that message across to people?
I mean, everyone is different. So the audience you have, in your audience, you have like so many different types of personalities and people with different backgrounds and knowledge. So, but I think what usually works best, if you can find one emotional trigger, you know, where somebody can relate to something, and that might be different things for different people, but maybe what Kai has just said, like if you have someone like walking you through the story and trying to relate to to topics that are very tangible to most people, like, okay, this is livelihoods, there's people struggling, so you can relate maybe, or there's been land erosion, there has been landslide, and there's been loss of biodiversity. Maybe some people saw that in front of their houses. I mean, trying to find like something that makes people think, I guess, is very important, and that's the tricky part.
Yeah, if I can add to that, I think that's exactly it. Like, human beings rationalize through their emotions, that's a very critical aspect of it. If you can't feel something, then you're not going to be moved to do something. But on the other side as well, sometimes even if you feel something and you don't know what to do, nothing happens either. So I think when it comes to things like conservation or climate change, I mean, they're all interrelated in many, many ways. And a lot of it is tied back to just the fact that we consume way too much. And we really don't know how to pare back or like some simple things that we can do that can actually make a big difference. And I think when we're talking about telling these stories, it's equally important as well to highlight where everybody does play a role, because sometimes people think, you know, it's the conservationist's job, it's the NGO's job,
or I'm too small to make a difference.
Yeah, or it's too small to make a difference. But when it comes to things like just saying no to plastic bags or plastic straws, if there's a very clear action that each individual has the responsibility to decide on, and they understand what it's for, or failing that, there's actually legal enforcement as well, then you start seeing change happening. I don't think it can just be one way to go about it, but I think together that will poise us in a better position to actually make the positive changes.
And this documentary has been nominated for the Kuala Lumpur Eco Film Festival 2021. Where can people watch it?
Well, it's going to be screened as part of the International KL Eco Film Festival. And so they have it on three platforms this year. Clefflix, I hope I'm saying that right. And people participating in the iGEM conference, which is organized by the Climate Change Agency. And our film was also selected to be screened at the Malaysian Pavilion and the Dubai Expo, running from October onwards. So I don't know if anybody's going to be in Dubai, but if you can't catch any of those, our intention is to get this out as openly and accessibly as possible. So it's likely going to be on YouTube at some point. So just keep an eye out.
Nadine, Kai, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Shazana.
I've been speaking to Dr. Khairiyah Mohamad Hanafiah and Dr. Nadine Rupert, senior lecturers at University Science Malaysia, on their documentary 50 Shades of Green: The Complex Story of Palm Oil. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.